has to win. Start with the ending. It's the best way to begin.
All right, we're back. We're about to press play on the, well, what is it? The conversation number 6. So we've had 7 out of 9 episodes. Next week will be the last session with Sue. And then the following week, Bev will join me again, and we're going to talk about our experience with Dr. Sue Johnson, taking us through her Hold Me Tight program. You can take your own dadgum Hold Me Tight program, by golly. If you go to drewmarshall.ca, you click on the big thing that says Hold Me Tight and sign up for it. Take the course that Bev and Drew. And let me tell you, sure, if you got the money, go hire a counselor and have them take you through it. But that's a lot of coin. But if you don't have the cash, I think it's about 300 American bucks, and that would be 1.5 sessions with a counselor.
Yeah, if that, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and it wouldn't even be an hour.
And you watch these videos, and Sue takes you through. There are other ones. There's comedic stuff. There's fun. Like, it's just lighthearted and good stuff and deep and everything. But then there's all these kind of multiple choice questions. You go through it as a couple. It's just really, really, really good stuff. And you can find that at drewmarshall.ca. Anyway, this is Rebuilding Love. How can a marriage rebuild after it ends? A 9-week series with myself, my wife, and relationship guru, psychologist, Dr. Sue Johnson, taking us through her Hold Me Tight program. This is conversation number 6. Oh, do we have the disclaimer ready? Let me just say it.
Okay.
This conversation is about bonding through sex and touch. And since we know Christians don't have sex.
Or touch.
Or touch. Unless they're getting slapped foreheaded healed.
Yes. With the baseball.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that hurt. That was a long story. And earlier in the show, so you don't know what we're talking about.
No.
But yeah, obviously, there's going to be stuff. It's not insanely. Actually, I thought it was going to be worser. Have a listen. Hi, everyone. We are back. Of course, Drew and Bev Marshall with Dr. Sue Johnson. And the book we've been chatting about is Hold Me Tight, 7 Conversations for a Lifetime of Love and Happiness and Wealth and Sex is the subtitle. Not really. But I bring up sex because this is the sex conversation. All these relationship things, at some point, you got to talk about sexy time.
And
yes, and it happens to be conversation number 6. Wait a second, I got to get the right title. It's not keeping your love alive. That would be good. That'd be the last one, I think. It is bonding through sex and touch.
Yes.
As I read that without my glasses. Yes. So, Dr. Sue, not to be confused with the other Dr. Sue that always talks about sex in Canada. That must happen to you all the time, Dr. Sue Johansson.
It happens sometimes. And the main reason I really dislike it is that she's about 30 years older than me. So I have to say, no, I am not Sue Johansson. Mind you, I must say, I used to watch her years ago on the television. I thought she was exceptionally good because she didn't play games. She was just very straightforward. She was very non-judgmental. She just gave people information. I thought she was very good, actually. But yes. She's 30 years older than me. I'm not her. Okay.
All right. Well, she actually has a cottage right next to ours. Well, a couple down. And so, you know, we drive by. When we give people a tour in the lake, we say, oh, that's Dr. Sue's house. And now I'm going to get them to believe our cottage. Now I'm going to get them to think that it's your place. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So how honest are we going to be in this conversation?
That is totally up to you guys. I think you're very brave to do this conversation at all, in spite of the fact that on one level, sex is everywhere in our society. Most people, when they come to their own sex lives, my experience is, it's difficult to talk about. We're very vulnerable here. We're talking about a dance that we do naked, right? So we're vulnerable. And my experience is that people often have, even today, they have a very hard time talking about this. So to do it in public, that's brave, guys. I think it's brave.
You mean to talk about it in public, not
yes.
Do it in public.
No, to talk about it in public, yes. Right. And I think it's great modeling for people because the bottom line is, I think we need to talk about it. It's an important aspect of our relationship. And you notice that the conversation is bonding through sex and touch. There's a piece of research, I can't remember who did it now, that basically came to the conclusion that North Americans are the most untouching society, you know, that have ever existed. And that's interesting because, you know, touch is a very basic way of connecting with other people. And I find, which is interesting from men, especially men, they talk about sex, but when you really go into exactly what they're talking about, they're actually saying to their partner, I need to be touched. I don't actually just want, you know, to have sex and have an orgasm. I need the physical connection with you. I need to be touched. I want to be, and some men don't feel that it's very manly to say, I want to be held, I want to be touched, I want you to show me physical affection. They think, oh, that's sort of wimpy. But, you know, it's incredibly basic when you think of the when our brain's developing over the first 2 years of life, we're held and touched all the time. And then suddenly as adults, we sort of somehow decide that that's not so great. You know, we need to be touched. And so it's an important piece that it's bonding through sex and touch.
Okay, that's perfect. So let's just give people the trajectory of these conversations, because if we didn't have one, then two, then three, then four, then five, then six, this conversation would be crazy. So what did we just do in order to get us to this point where we can breathe through this conversation?
I think that's a very good point. You know, what we did was look at the places you get stuck. Look at your negative dance that you get caught in together. I mean, to put it very briefly, you know, Bev, when she wants to protect herself, she shuts down and turns away. And when you are feeling disconnected, you come on strong, right? And you push for more connection. And so you've had this dance of push, turn away, push in your marriage. And so we looked at that and you saw it and you saw what it was about. And you were able to help each other out with that. So once you can turn down that dance of disconnection where you end up feeling vulnerable and alone, then we also talked about your feelings and changing the emotional music in your dance. And we talked about creating positive dances where you reach for each other and connect and share your fears and your needs in a way that the other person can hear and pulls that other person close to you. So if you think you've done a lot of work to get ready for this conversation, you know, it's like, and that's deliberate. Okay. It's like, you're absolutely right. You don't start off having this conversation. It's too difficult for people. You know, we have a lot of very vulnerable feelings around our sexuality. You know, I think we're particularly vulnerable. You know, we talked about raw spots, that we all have these raw spots. Well, I think we're particularly vulnerable when we're talking about sexuality. You know, it's one thing to watch sexy movies and things, but when we're actually talking about our own sexuality, then it becomes much more difficult. So you need to have some safety first. You need to have had the hold me tight conversation where you can talk about your emotional fears and needs. And by the way, you know, what we find is that when you can talk about your emotional fears and needs and you could be open and responsive to each other, that openness and responsiveness is amazing in bed and out of bed. It's the same dance in a way. It's you trust each other more because of the hold me tight conversation. You're more able to voice your fears and ask your partner's help with them. You're more able to say what you need. Well, all that translates into the bedroom. You know, if you wish it to, you know, all of that translates into the bedroom. So it makes perfect sense to me. But we've done some weird things with sex in our society. You know, if you look at my field, there's two elements. There's sex therapy and relationship therapy. Well, really, that's crazy, okay? Because guess what? Duh, you know, I don't see the point in that. You know, it's, no, you've got to bring those two together. But actually, if you look out there, what magazines want for sexual tips, what Cosmopolitan wants, what people talk about a lot is how to improve your sex life. Oh, find some new, incredibly gymnastic positions. There's one in the new Joy of Sex called Wailing Monkey Climbing Tree. And if you can, I won't go into it, but can you imagine?
All I want to know is if there's bananas involved. That's all I want to know.
Okay, but can you imagine? And so people, we think this is the way to improve our sex life, is to find some technique or some magic position, or, and they're all sort of from the outside, right? They're all thinking about just from the physical point of view. But what we see is that couples massively improve their sex life by being able to tune into their emotional music and be more open and responsive and more sharing with each other, because they dance in tune. They dance more sensitively. And sex is a dance, right? They dance in a way that they feel safe with each other, so they can take risks. So I always say the best recipe for a great sex life is to be able to have a hold me tight conversation, to be emotionally open.
Yeah. And okay, so I'm going to ask a question and then see if I get the answer, and you tell me how close I am to where I need to be. My question is, what do you say to the guys out there who are thinking, okay, the only reason you're doing all of this is so you get more sex? Because if your woman, your wife, wants to have more sex, then you'll get more sex. And in order to get your wife to have more sex, then you got to get into this touchy-feely stuff.
Well, I don't think that works, because it's like you're making a deal. I'll talk if you give me sex. And that's not a recipe for great sex. That's a recipe for making a deal. And how turned on do you feel when you're sitting writing out a legal contract, or, you know, it's on a whole different level, okay? That's, I don't think, and you know, when I've talked to a lot of men in a lot of relationships over the last 30 years, and men will start off by saying, I want more sex. But when you actually go in and talk to them, it's not as simple as that. The thing that stands out the most for me is men are really saying lots of times, yes, I'd like more sex. I like sex, but I want to feel desired. Mm. I want to feel that my partner thinks I'm hot and special and responds to me in a way that, you know, she doesn't with other men. I want to feel desired. I want to be touched. And so actually, when you start exploring his sexuality with a man, you know, it's not just about, I want to penetrate and have an orgasm. And it's tricky, because when couples don't know how to talk about it, it often goes into, the woman says, you don't really want to be close to me, you just want an orgasm. And the man says, you know, you're just trying to deprive me of an orgasm. And they're stuck. That's so stuck there.
Yeah.
Right? It takes all the relationship out of the sexuality. We can't do that, because for bonding mammals, sex is a bonding activity. It doesn't have to be a bonding activity. It can be recreation. But, you know, lots of times in relationships, it's got this bonding element. And that changes everything.
Yeah. Well, to start this conversation for us, we need to just let our listeners know that one of the shaky foundational building blocks for us at the beginning of our relationship involved the fact that, or has to do with the fact that we both grew up as teenagers involved with like a Christian camp, and we were in ministry, and there was a lot of Bible stuff and Jesus stuff. And so, I mean, heck, drinking was looked down on. So, you know, sex was really looked down on. So that's number one. Or sorry, premarital sex was really looked down on.
Yes.
And then number two, we did do premarital sex, and then we got pregnant, and then we got married. And so all of that plays into probably I don't know. There's a dynamic there that plays into this conversation, I think.
You better believe. I mean, the bottom line is it was forbidden, and then you did it anyway, and then it was difficult. You got in trouble, and it was dangerous, right? So it's loaded right from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Such a shame that we do the forbidden thing, because sexuality is just part of who we are. And if you believe in a benevolent creator, which I do, if you believe in a benevolent creator, you know, I mean, he created that sexual part of us as well. He or she, whatever, created that sexual part of us as well. So I feel like we should respect it, just like we respect all kinds of other parts of ourselves.
Yeah. Okay, so Sue, we're going to let you lead us in this conversation like all the other ones, because we don't know what we're talking about.
Okay, so let's start with that, you know, I asked you in the beginning of all this on an emotional level what your dance was that you get caught in.
Right.
And Drew said, well, I get lonely and I want, please forgive me if I say it in my way, you can correct me. I get lonely and I want to know that I'm loved. And so, you know, I kind of come on strong and I get pushy. And Bev hears me saying that I'm not pleased with her and she moves away. And the more she moves away, the more I push. And the more I push, the more she moves away and we get stuck. Now, that's a negative cycle. It doesn't have to be negative. You know, but I guess my question for the beginning is, do you guys do that around sexuality as well? Is it like, is the way you usually dance together around sexuality, Drew comes on strong and Bev is a bit reluctant? What's your usual dance? Did you think about that around sexuality?
Bev?
Yeah, that probably sums it up. I don't think I have a very strong sex drive to begin with. And we're talking about that a lot today, whether that had a lot to do with the beginnings of our relationship. Drew is my first. It was kind of, you know, like you said, forbidden before marriage. So it was tainted from the beginning. And then, you know, got pregnant. I was incredibly sick through my 9 months. So not really feel like having sex when I was so sick. So it's been a negative cycle from the beginning. And then there was lots of ups and downs in those early years where we both didn't really like each other a lot. We kind of put up with each other, being young parents and lots of different job shifts. And so we never had that beginnings, you know, great start where, you know, the sex is amazing without that little bit before when we first started exploring each other and the excitement of exploring each other when we were just getting together. And then of course, you know, getting pregnant. So, and then, you know, sickness right straight from that.
Yeah. But summarizing our sex life, is there a correlation to our sex life and our sort of demon dialogue, that wax and wane? I come on strong and you back off.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Right. So you help me. I mean, I hear you talking about your history, but it's often true that a couple do not have the same, they don't necessarily have the same urgency or the same tenor to their desire or the same level of desire, right? And this is something that lots and lots of couples have to be able to deal with, right? And it's a tricky one because, you know, we want to be desired. And one of the things that we've decided in this society is that one of the main things about desire is that somebody comes on to you, that's the way they show their desire for you, right? We call sex making love, right? So it gets difficult for people, you know, this difference gets difficult. And this is one of the reasons why you need to be able to talk about sexuality. You need to be able to say things like, you know, I don't want as much sex as you, but I like sex, especially when it's like this, right? Or I like, and I, you know, it would help me become more turned on if this happened. By the way, one of the big changes that's happened in this area recently is that we're starting to understand women's sexuality better. That women's sexuality is not just the mirror image of men's sexuality, but a little bit less. There's a lot of evidence now that for a woman to really, really allow herself to move into desire, she needs to feel emotionally safe. And if you think about that, it makes a lot of sense. In sexuality, a woman is amazingly vulnerable. For one thing, she's smaller than most men. She's vulnerable. In the sex act, she's literally vulnerable. She has her legs open, right? Her body is open. And so women's bodies can get turned on, but it's like their brain checks in and says, well, is this okay? There's a check in their prefrontal cortex. They check it out. And if their brain says, nah, I don't feel that safe here. I don't feel that connected. I don't feel that safe. I don't feel seen.
Right.
Their bodies, basically, it never becomes desire. Their bodies can be reacting like they're going to get turned on. And if you say to the woman, do you feel desire right now? She says, no. So we're starting to understand that for women in particular, you know, emotional connection is, it's like so important. I think it's important for men too, but it's so important for women. So I think what you said, Bev, is really interesting. You said at the beginning of our relationship, you know, we didn't, because of all kinds of circumstances, we didn't have this safety. We didn't have this, you know, spontaneous connection. We didn't feel maybe entitled to explore. We didn't start that way. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't start with that feeling, you know, of just being able to tune into my passion and go with my desire. There were blocks to my desire. My brain was telling me, be careful and, you know, don't do this, and right? And yeah. That makes sense. That gets in the way. Notice the antidote to what I just said, though. The antidote is women particularly need their partner to help them feel safe. And that's not a deal thing. That's not, you know, the man saying, I'll give you 5 minutes of emotional chat. if then we make love for an hour. It doesn't work. It doesn't work in terms of safety. The woman says, now, you know what? I still don't feel safe. I don't know why I don't feel safe. So it's got to be genuine. You know, the man's got to be willing to say, you know, how are you feeling right now? You know, I want to be with you. You want to be with me? What's happening? You know, there's got to be some real connection there. And then the woman's brain, her body starts to respond, and the brain says, yeah, okay. Okay, you can feel desire. You can feel desire. It seems like that doesn't happen so much in men. Men, their bodies turn on, they're turned on. It's kind of like they don't pause to go into their prefrontal cortex and check it out with their brain. They just go, right?
Wait, yeah. Hold on. We have a prefrontal cortex? What?
Yes, you do, I think. Yes. So I'm hearing you. So this, but help me now, because you're in a new relationship now. You've changed so much. So when you look at this pattern, which used to be pretty disastrous for you emotionally, right? When you're in this pattern of Drew pursuing and Bev being reluctant and, you know, moving away and Drew pursuing. So you help me. Now you feel safer emotionally. Can you shift that relationship in the bedroom? Can you ever tell him, Bev? Can you ever tell him, right now, I'm looking at you and I just feel like you're such a handsome guy, you're so sexy, and I just want you to touch me all over. I mean, could you imagine saying something like that to him now?
Not in a million years. I would like to think that I could say that, and that's what we've talked about too. I don't communicate what I'm even feeling, whether that's good or negative. So even when I'm feeling, you know, not good about where we are, I don't communicate that. And even the other day, you know, he was rubbing my feet. We were watching something on TV and he was rubbing my feet. I'm thinking, oh, this feels so amazing. But I didn't tell him that felt so amazing. So,
let's start there. Yeah. Let's start the conversation where you're at. Let's start there. Yeah. Could you turn to Drew and could you tell him, it's so hard for me even to think about turning and telling you, even if it was something good, like that's amazing that you're grabbing my feet. It's so hard for me to let you see me like that. It's so hard for me to talk to you emotionally, on that level emotionally, and on that level with around my body and around us being together physically. Can you tell him that in your words? That mine were a bit, nerdy. can you tell him that?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this morning or this afternoon about, me not being able to communicate what I'm thinking or feeling. And I realized how much better it'd be if I could open up and let you know what I'm thinking, because then you could respond and feel like when you're reaching out to me that, wow, she actually really does like that. Which makes me want to do it more. So it's a win-win for me if I would just open my mouth and say something. So, I mean, and he really needs that.
What's going to happen? What's your worst catastrophic fantasy? If you turned to Drew and said, I just love the way you're stroking my feet right now. It just makes me feel so loved and so relaxed and so like I'm your special wife. What's going to happen if you turn and actually tell him that that's going on? What's going to happen?
I don't know. I think if I told you that, you would be grateful. But I guess I don't ever think about your perspective. And I'm so used to being silent that I take you out of the equation, which isn't fair. So I need to be able to...
You know that you keep him in the dark. And then, of course, you're right. He doesn't know what you need. He doesn't. And that's actually true with a lot of us. We feel so shy and so reluctant to say what we like and what we don't like. And then guess what? Our partner doesn't know.
Funny, that mind reading thing just never comes.
No, our partner doesn't know. And then we say, sex is not such a big deal, or maybe there's something wrong with me, I'm not very sexy, or whatever, 1,000 things, when in fact it's a communication issue. We never turn and say, I remember one conversation with a couple where she started to feel safer and she turned to him. And she'd had a very, very, very difficult childhood. And she turned to him and said, your favorite thing to do physically is that you come up behind me and you grab me from behind and you pull me close to you, standing in the kitchen, right? And she said, I don't know how to tell you this, but I really hate it. I hate it. And it's got nothing to do with you. I feel like I'm a 4-year-old again with all my bullying brothers, and I feel scared, and I've never told you, and it's so unfair because on some level I know that you are trying to express love for me, and I've never told you, and I'm scared to tell you now. I'm scared of hurting you. I'm scared that you'll get angry with me. I'm scared you'll tell me there's something wrong with me. But I really hate it when you come up behind me and grab me like that. And her husband, he wept because he said, how could you not tell me? And she said, I was too scared. But then you see, look at the positive thing that happens. He says, when do you feel good? And when do I do things that make you feel safe and loved and open up to me? And then she said, when you come towards me and I can see you, and you have this incredible thing where you reach down and look at what she does. She says, you kiss me right here, very slowly. And she says, when you do that, I just open up to you emotionally and physically. I feel so safe. I feel so... That's what you, and he says, but imagine they didn't share that. Mm. They didn't share that. And so it's so difficult then, because the music gets real confused. You know, I can be playing music called, I'm trying to show you that I desire you and that you're so important to me and I want to be close. And you could be picking up something totally different. You know, we're not even talking about it, right? But it's hard for you. Then I can imagine that if you say that, then it's a complete difficulty for you to imagine. There's an exercise in here, I was looking at, where I asked for homework. I asked the couple to turn and say, you know, if would you write out a brief guide for the lover of, and then you put your name down and you say, this is my, what a dream lover would do if in our relationship. I guess that's really difficult for you, Bev, yeah?
Oh, yes, yes. I make jokes about, I guess that would be tickling my feet.
Hey, you know, and seriously, people are different. I mean, if you look at people are different, you know, some people like to be held tightly. Some people don't. Some people like to have somebody nuzzle their neck. Some people don't. I do not like people touching my feet. I don't like pedicures. Get your hands off my feet. So, you know, you have to be able to say. So, Drew, what's it like for you that Bev has this, because of all kinds of very good reasons, right, that she finds it really hard to kind of show you her emotions and show you where she is physically around sexuality. What's that like for you? That must be difficult then.
Okay. Excuse me. Well, our life can be divided into before separation and after separation.
All right.
Okay. It's like before Christ and after Christ.
Yes.
Not really.
Well, that just ruined that vibe. Okay.
We get the point. Yeah.
Okay. So before separation, I would be frustrated and kind of take it personally and get sucky about it. And like, what are you even here? Are you enjoying this? Are you alive? Like what's, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it just felt like Bev was not enjoying anything having to do with sex ever.
She wasn't with you.
She wasn't with me and she wasn't enjoying it. And I'm just, you know, but now I'm really looking forward to this new side of us, because I now know that this is Bev's personality type. This is just who Bev is. I don't have to take that personally.
Right. And see, that's something huge. And that's the other thing that you can get by talking. You know, you start to realize, wait a minute, this is just the way this person deals with their emotions and their desires. It's not that they don't want to be with me. It's not a personal rejection, right? So that changes everything. Because after all, if it is a personal rejection, whoa, then the bedroom becomes dangerous. It's like it's got minefields all over it. And how good are you at relaxing and enjoying when you're terrified that a bomb's going to go off? You're not, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I hear you that it's when you have a new openness, it can be different. Right. But that must have been very difficult for you then when you were taking it personally. It's like sex was the opportunity for you to feel rejected. Yeah.
You know, again, I was in a headspace where I was the rat bag. I was the one, I was too sexually interested. I don't even know what the right words are. I was way too into sex. And so therefore, one of the reasons Bev was not really into sex was because I was way too into it. So if anybody needed to fix something, needed to fix something, it was me.
Yeah, I hear you. And often, you know, I talk about different kinds of sexual styles in my book. And I think what you're talking about, I would call solace sex. And men and women do it. And they say, I want orgasm. But if you actually talk to them, it's not about orgasm. It's I want this connection with you, and I want it so badly because I want you to desire me. And the only time I really feel like you're desiring me is if I'm in bed with you, and da da da. And it's all about that needing to be desired, and it's becomes an emotionally urgent thing. And you can't, if you can't talk about that, right? If you can't talk about that, and then you come on like you're just obsessed with sex, and that pushes the person further away.
It totally did. And I discovered back in those days, you know, I thought I had like a sex addiction, but it turns out it was more like a love addiction.
Yes. And we, and it's a tricky one, that, because, you know, we're physical animals, we're emotional animals. And it's a tricky one. You know, I want to feel desired by my partner. So if my partner doesn't respond to me physically, that's really a hard one. You know, it's like my brain says, there you are, you see, I'm not their special one. And it's very, this is what I mean by people are vulnerable between the sheets. You know, unless they have the other kind of sex that I call sealed off sex, which is very popular in our culture. People seem to think it's hot. I don't think it's hot at all. You know, it's like basically your body's there and you're into sensation and performance, and you bury your emotions so that they can't be touched. That's like dancing without music. Dancing without music is, in the end, it's a bore, because, you know, I mean, just imagine how flat it is to dance without music after a while. And you have to dance bigger and bigger steps and more to sort of really get off on it, right? So people start having sealed off sex where it's not about being close and playing. Passion's about being able to play, right, and explore it, you know, being open to the unexpected, right? And for lots of people, they're just driven to love me, desire me, you know, sleep with me. And they never talk about the emotions. So then that starts to really go wrong. And now that's different.
Am I going to start with that one, do you think? I think you should. How is it now? Is it different now, Bev?
Well, we're just talking about, it's been, 5 weeks since we renewed our vows.
Since our honeymoon.
Since our honeymoon.
Yes.
And within that, we've had a couple flu bugs, a couple illnesses, Drew being...
a male, and therefore when I'm sick, I'm sucky.
And just, you know, stuff we're doing at the farm, it's physically, so we're exhausted at night. So when we fall into bed, like 2 seconds later, you know, he says, I'm snoring. So, yeah, so we're at this new stage of life where, you know, as much as we thought we were going to come together and...
In always.
Yeah.
In every way.
In every way, being more intimate because there's not the stigmas, and we've worked into a great relationship. The urgency isn't there. And I think Drew's, because his sex drive has waned being where he is in life and the stage we're in life.
Wait, doesn't that mean yours should wax?
Well, yeah. So yeah, it's not the number one motivator in our lives as far as getting close to each other.
It's not the number one motivator at all, which has also helped to take pressure off of that arena, because we have talked about this whole thing. Like, you know, Bev, you know, how do I say this concisely? I know you want to dive in. I got to get this out. Before separation, I was the one that initiated 99% of the time.
Yes.
And that was a sore spot or raw spot for me. Why don't you ever initiate? If I didn't initiate, there'd be no sex, you know, that kind of a thing. Yes. And then I'd always be facing potential rejection, because if you're the one initiating, the odds are up that you're going to get rejected, right? So, so now we're back from the honeymoon. a week or so goes by, and Bev's sitting in like, man, are we going to like fool around or what? and she initiates, and I had to go, I don't got it. I'm sorry. This is beautiful. Thanks. And my whole dream has come true. You're initiating, and I can't come to the party in this one.
Right. So then you have to, you help each other just like you do emotionally. Right. You help each other and you talk about it, and you have a safety to talk about it.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing. And in some ways, I think, you know, we have this image that sex is best when you're young. I'm not so sure. I hear a lot of couples say, when we've learned to be emotionally close, and it's not so completely urgent, and it's not loaded with all kinds of emotional issues about whether this person loves me or not. We can talk about it and we can take our time, and it doesn't have to start with huge urgent stuff like in the movies. It can just start with playing and talking and touching and then move into sexuality or not. And it becomes a more flexible dance, right? So I kind of think that's very good, actually, that you're reversing the pattern that you've been in. And now now Bev's saying, well, hey, Drew, where are you? Don't you desire me? And you get to say, well, actually, you know, somehow my nervous system isn't singing that song right now, and that you can do that. You know, what we never talk about is to really say yes to your partner. You've got to safely say no, be able to say no and not mean that you get into all kinds of negativity. You know, and that means you have to have a certain safety, because there is a feeling of rejection. To be able to say, you know what, sweetie, I feel close to you, but somehow my sexual mojo just isn't turning on. To be able to say that and for the person to say, oh, gee, that's too bad. But never mind, let's cuddle. Let's, you know, that's what I see in older couples, that they can do that and they can still have the touch and the physical connection. And then sometimes it turns into sexuality and sometimes it doesn't. It's a more flexible thing, right? It can be a more interesting dance, actually, because it's not so driven all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in trying to figure out, you know, is this a physiological thing or is this a psychological thing for me? You know, time of life, working my butt off at the farm, the stresses of the show coming to an end and the different things, blah, blah, and whatever reasons are there. Is it psychological or is it just a physiological reality? I wondered about this and I wanted your opinion on this, Sue. Bev and I were never friends before, ever. 28 years of marriage, we didn't start as friends. We never had a friendship. Now we have a friendship. And it's so good. Like, seriously, it's ridiculous. So good.
Yes.
But I've never wanted to have sex with a friend. Know what I mean?
But this is a very special kind of friend. I hear you, but...
Do you think that is screwing with my head at all?
No, I think... To be honest, I would bet a lot of money on the fact that this is a new dance you're not used to. You were the sexual pursuer. So, you know, it's different for her to turn and say, where are you? And you're older. And yeah, if you're tired and you're exhausted and you're preoccupied, hey, you know. But
I've had the flu twice in a month.
Yeah, I think it's actually a really lovely opportunity. I think it's beautiful opportunity to try something new and let Bev be the initiator and you see if you want to hold back or not, and you be able to tell her how she can help you if you want to be turned on or you want to get a bit more sexual. How could she help you? I think that would be a beautiful new dance for you guys. Can you imagine? So now Bev gets to say, she could be quite sort of conservative about it. She gets to say something like, hey, are we going to make out ever again? Or something like that. Hey, what about now or in the next week? You know, and you get to say, gee, I don't know where I put my sexual mojo. I can't put my hand on it right now. I don't know where it is. And her to say, okay, let's hug and let's talk and I'll rub your back. And there's still lots of physical pleasure you can have without what we call sex, and people forget that. But also for you to be able to say, well, you know, why don't you help me a little, you know, do the sexiest things, do what you think I'd like, and you can play, and she can help you into sexuality rather than you always knocking on the door and saying, excuse me. Can we have sex now, right? It's an opportunity for her to take the lead, Drew. How about letting her take the lead and you telling her how she can, you know, Bev said, I'm too shy to do the you know, tell your partner that this is what my dream lover would do, your fantasy. But maybe you could tell her, not on air, I don't think we should do it now, but because it's very private, okay? But maybe you could tell her, this is my dream scenario, right?
Okay. Here's an interesting fact that ties in with the Jesus stuff, the Christian tribe, that whole, you know, evangelical mentality world.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, Christian married couples aren't supposed to fantasize about anything.
What?
No, no fantasy, no role playing, no, you know, it's just you, you're my love, I love you, everything about you, and we don't need to be adding, like, there's, you know what I mean? I'm just saying that this plays a debilitating role in, and I think maybe even more so Bev's psyche. Is that, did I throw you under the bus, or are you okay with that? Is that true or not?
I don't know. Like, there's so much that played into our beginnings that it's hard to know how things would have been different had past things not happened.
Yes.
So it's very hard to know, are we this way because of what we grew up with believing, or what the tribe said is right and what you can do or what to do, or whether it was just me being shy and body conscious for whatever reason. There's just so many things.
Yes, it was probably a little of both. But, you know, for sure, you're female and you grew up in a context of being a woman of faith. Mm-hmm. And traditionally in that, you know, women are basically taught that you need to restrain your sexuality, guard your sexuality. It's a source of shame or maybe sin. And you need to, because it's not really acceptable for you to be openly sexual, right? That's what a lot of people of faith believe, right? So then you're right. It's going to inhibit you, right?
Not only that, you're also taught that to withhold from your husband is wrong too. So there's this theory out there that, and I said to Drew, you know, I mean, all women, the women
that's a recipe for go through the motions.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but go through the motions isn't going to do it for him, and that's the truth.
So, no.
I told her that this afternoon. That was my number one turnoff when I even sense that you were like faking or you weren't into it at all, man, that's a shutdown for me.
Yeah. See, what we're talking about, one way of thinking all this is that in a safe, loving couple, sex is play, right? Yes. It's we talk about the quality of a bond is about ARE, are you there for me? Accessibility, responsiveness, and engagement. Coming towards somebody, being open and responsive, when it's the same in bed. But there's erotic play involved. Well, look at the things we're talking about. I mean, it's like trying to play with irons on your legs. You know, if somebody's told you, you mustn't ever feel this way, or if you feel this way, somehow it's a sin, or, you know, you mustn't. And I think women in particular have been taught, you know, female sexuality is a dangerous thing and you must kind of keep it under lock and key. But you're supposed to be sexy with your husband. the human brain just doesn't work that way. You know, I mean, if I don't trust my body, I don't listen to I've been told, don't listen to your body, don't trust your body, and certainly don't feel entitled to say to a man, I'd like to be, you know, turned on this way. Oh my goodness me. Then, you know, you're just, it's so hard to dance. But you guys have that openness and connection now. I mean, you can learn to do that. I don't see why not. And I think it's a great idea that Bev now takes the initiative and you,
She's not smiling in this one.
Bev, I'd like you to think about that it's about helping him, because women know how to do that role very well. Yeah. If you say to a woman, would you help this person? They go, oh yeah. So I'd like you to think about that this is a new relationship, right? And maybe for you to come close, you're the one who was the most distant physically and emotionally, but maybe for you to come close, maybe Drew needs to leave it up to you for a little while. and for you to do what you did naturally, which is to say to him, hey, aren't we gonna like make out or something? And you know, for you to help him move into sexuality with a friend, which is, yeah, well, you know, for most people, there's a risk there. And that's why some of us like only making love or having sex with strangers, because there's no risk involved, because, you know, if you can just walk away from a stranger, the risk is emotional. When you come and you make love with your friend, your best friend, there's an emotional risk there. You know, there's a risk of rejection. And so it's a whole different bag. And you're right about that, Drew. It's a whole different bag. But I think it's also really good that you can talk about all this, and that, you know, Bev can now turn and say, what about it? And you can turn and say, I'm not quite there. And you can have that conversation, and it doesn't turn into big negative stuff about somebody being rejected. It doesn't turn into the whole relationship going wrong. It's just, I'm not quite there. Right. I mean,
can I just say in this chapter, I have to put the old readers on here. In this chapter, conversation six, that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Bonding through sex and touch. There were some questions that you wanted, each of us to ask each other.
Yes. And I'm assuming that you might use those. I'm assuming you might not want to talk about all of those
not necessarily our answers, but I want our listeners and viewers to hear these questions, because I was just sitting there going, wow, these are great conversation starters.
Okay.
And when I think about, like, I make a living up from my mouth and asking questions, and if Bev and I ask four of these questions of each other,
yeah,
a long time ago, without the emotional, insecurities and baggage and everything, if we just had this conversation, oh man, do you mind if I share it with our listeners?
No, go with it. Go for it.
If this is that brief guide you were talking about, if you wrote out a brief guide for the lover of Drew, yeah, right. So I write out. Here's my guide for if you're gonna be the lover of Drew. Here's the thing. Basic directions might include answers to the following. What helps begin to open up emotionally and physically? What helps you to begin to open up emotionally and physically to sex? What turns you on the most before and during lovemaking? How long do you expect pleasuring or foreplay and intercourse to last? What is your preferred position? That's the first one. That's the easiest one in the world. But these other ones, do you enjoy fast or slow lovemaking? Now,
yes.
Bev, let me know that every woman on the planet would prefer slow lovemaking.
Yes.
but because you love your man so much, you may not be into it. So because I love you so much, a quickie is, we're good to that. We're good to go with that. So that's fun, right? So these are great conversations. What is the most stirring way for your lover to stimulate you into deepest engagement and lovemaking? I can't even get these sentences out because I'm so excited about them. So these are all just fantastic. And there's more here. I'm not going to go into them. So
yes, but I want you to notice that the reason this is conversation six is because you're going to have a really hard time even listening to those questions, let alone really exploring them inside, let alone sharing them with your partner, if you don't have a certain kind of emotional safety. Okay? You really are. I mean, people just won't do it. But yes, those are the questions. If a couple come to me and they're sometimes the couples just come and we help their relationship and the sex gets better because they're more open and they're more safe and they can explore more. And sometimes people come with specific sexual issues. And then we still do, we create the safety first, right? We do all the conversations that we've had together. And then we talk about, what's your sexual dance? You know, what happens in sex, you know, what can't you tell each other? And then we do this, right? And those questions, it's amazing to me that people can be together for years and years and years and they never ask those questions. And just the pace, for one thing, You know, I think really we are starting to understand that women's sexuality is different than men's. And one of the issues is pace. This isn't true for all women, but for many, many, many women, the bottom line is they will try to please their partner, and their partner is just too fast. And that's the truth. They don't take, the evidence is that women take longer to become aroused. And perhaps it's what I talked about, which is their prefrontal cortex is checking out, do I want to become aroused? Do I want to feel this way? Is it safe? But it takes longer, right? And that's nothing to do with whether they love their man, whether they desire their man, whether, you know, sex can still be great for them. It's that they need the time and they need to feel safe. And one way of helping them feel safe is to go into that emotional connection. It's not the only way, you know, just being affectionate with each other. We forget, you know, I've worked with couples who never touch each other, but they expect to have great sex. Yeah, that's like, you know, I don't listen to music. I don't move my legs at all, but I expect to do ballet at the Met, you know, anytime soon. No, guys, like, give me a break. You know, you've got to start with safe touch and affection and, you know, just lying in each other's arms. That's where you start, right?
Okay. As I'm actually playing through the scenario of these questions and community, look, most dudes these days are finally getting that communication is part of sex. The better the communication, the better the odds are that sex is going to be better.
Yep.
But I don't think most of us can imagine, all right, let's get into bed. All right, now let's crack open the book. Okay, now let's read these questions. Okay, good. Now should I try? Okay, there. So you want me to do what? Okay, let me put the book down and let me try that. How does that? No, I just, okay, let's go to the next question. How do we, right? Like, that's not going to happen. So
no, that's kind of, I can't imagine that. I assume that people will have these conversations before they get into bed. And then it becomes not so scary, and then little pieces of them will come up in bed in a spontaneous way.
Okay, but here's where I want to inject a bit of the male brain. Maybe just my brain, but I think it's the male brain in general. We have the talk after dinner, we read the book, we talk about some of the questions, whatever we do, we go, okay, now we've learned some stuff, let's go, it's sexy time now, let's go. We go to bed and we, sexy time. Well, as soon as sexy time starts, I can't even remember the questions, let alone the answers. And then Bev and I were talking earlier about, let's just bring us back into the scenario. It's hard for Bev to communicate. So there's inevitably in most couples, one of the partners is better communicating than the other. The one that finds it hard to communicate, when they do communicate, in Bev's case, for example, it's, oh, don't do that, or oh, I don't like that, or oh, no, that doesn't work. And I'm saying, oh, will you please tell me what I'm doing right? Please tell me, like, if you're enjoying something, like I tickled the feet the other night, tell me.
But you see, but look at what you're doing right now. That's so positive. What you're doing right now, right here, is you're saying to your lady, you know what? I want to hear from you. I want to know how to turn you on. I want us to be together in sexuality. And I want to hear from you, but you know what? I need positive stuff too. I need you to tell me, because I'm a human being and I'm vulnerable, I'm coming on to you. I need you to tell me what I'm doing right. And so you're telling her, Bev, I need you to tell me what I'm doing right, right? Otherwise it's too hard for me, right? I think that's perfect. You're talking about how you can have a safer conversation about sex, right? That's perfect, you know? And it makes so much sense. In that situation, I'm vulnerable. I can't take in, you're not doing it this way, you're not doing it. I can't take all that in unless I also hear, oh, but I love it when you do this, this feels great, you know, right? So yeah, you're telling her something, you're telling her how to communicate with you in the sexual dance. You're saying, you got to reassure me by telling me the things I'm doing right. And I think that's really important for her to know. Yeah?
Yeah, and I just want to check in with Bev. How does that make you feel? Do you feel like I just threw you under the bus?
Or no, not at all. I mean, my only defense would be, like, how many times I would say, don't do that. Like, he knows I'm fussy around my neck. So you can't kiss my neck because it just gives me the eebie-jeebies. So he'll go and kiss me the neck. I mean, this is the 100 and...
It's so automatic to just go in for a little neck kiss, you know?
So what I'm being saying, don't do that. It's like, are you freaking kidding me? I've been saying this for the last 20 years. Stop doing it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So that's one way, you know, you're saying, hey, buddy, you know...
are you thick?
The neck's off limits, okay? The neck's mine. It's not a joint territory. It's mine, right? So and that's fair enough.
Yeah.
And it's also fair enough that what I think Drew's saying is I get carried away with, you know, feeling sexy and I forget those things. So you have to say, hey, what you doing? Right? See, this is in the movies, they never show people. In the movies, people don't communicate at all. People don't even say, excuse me, would you move over? I'm falling off the bed. I mean, it's so unreal. You know, it's like everything comes together. Boom. People are in the same place. You know, it's nonsense. It's complete nonsense. And it's not okay. Because often that's the only sex education we get. And it sets up these weird expectations that we have, right? If you're going to dance together, you've got to be able to communicate. Really, you do. And that's the bottom line. So look at what you're doing. You're saying to her, I want to know what's going on with you. I know it's hard for you to communicate. And you know, you can help me listen by telling me when I'm doing it right. Everybody wants to know when they're doing it right. Sometimes I just think in terms of our schools. Imagine what would happen if we all decided to praise the hell out of kids for a year. Wow. Personally, I think our IQ would shoot through the roof because people would say, oh, you know, I can do it, right? So you've just said something very human. Can you hear him when he says that?
Oh, for sure. It's the communication thing. I just have to, when it's in here, get it out.
That's right. Okay, well, you've done your very own unique version of one way through the sex conversation. And as usual, you've done it genuinely and with courage and with genuineness. And I think it's great you've done that. And I think you're giving people a real sense of possibilities of how they can talk about their sex life in a way that allows them to be safer and more free with each other.
How, Sue, can you help me just as we come to the end of this one? Can you recap what just happened? Because, like, I know that formulas aren't the answers. Formulas are not the answer, but is there some takeaway from this particular conversation, number 6, about sex and touch, that you can just kind of break down into a couple of bite-sized points or takeaway? Like, how do we grab onto this conversation other than what I've just kind of gotten is, again, be vulnerable, tell your lover what you want, what you like,
and what scares you.
And what scares you, yeah.
You just told your lover, hey, if the only feedback I get is negative, then it starts to be really hard for me. And that's really important for her to know, right? That's really important. You've told your lover, right? And so really we're doing the same thing as we've done. We're talking about physical connection now, but it's the same as the emotional connection. What we did was we looked at patterns. We looked at how you guys used to get stuck in a negative dance around your physical connection. We looked at how things are shifting. We looked at, you know, in terms of initiating, who's initiating who. I suggested that in your new relationship, maybe Bev could be the initiator. You've got to let her do that, though, by the way. Never mind you've had flu right now, but when you're over the flu, you got to let, if she's going to shift, you got to give her room to initiate, okay?
Yes.
So, you know, and then you can, and when you feel safe, you can explore. You can, you know, change who initiates, change, you know, and you can, in the end, it's all about communication, talking about what you need, what you want, and having that sense of safety and acceptance from each other, right? That, and we talked about how sometimes the atmosphere in faith, you know, that all comes from people of faith not trusting our bodies. You know, over the centuries, so many of us decided that our bodies were a source of sin. You know, it's very fascinating we've done that. I mean, if you believe in a good creator, he created your body. So, you know, like it's, but we went there and, you know, I was brought up by Catholic nuns and my goodness me, the messages around sexuality were, well, basically, if you got turned on, you went straight to hell. That was the, so, you know, that was it, right?
Yeah.
So who wants you?
No. And you gotta be, you gotta be back with those nuns. They were afraid of bad habits as well.
Yeah, yes, okay, I got it. But I think you guys are learning to communicate more openly and be more present and real with each other. And that translates into the bedroom. So in a way, we've touched on things, you know, and we've touched on exploring different roles and what you need from each other, you know, how you can help each other. It's the same conversation. It's just between the sheets rather than sitting on the couch talking about feelings. It's the same.
And I, I just want to say, trying to think if I actually want to say this or not. Yeah. For the first time in decades, I'm just trying to decide if I'm putting more flowers on this than I need to, but this is true. Honestly, Bev, for the first time in decades, I am really looking forward to sexy time. I keep calling it sexy time because I'm immature, but it's, because it's so, it's going to be, because we aren't, haven't quite hit that mark yet, but it's going to be, it's going to be safe. It's going to be, it's going to be playful.
Yes.
Safe and playful. I'm good with those two words.
And one of the big, huge mistakes we've made in our society is we've somehow decided that if you feel emotionally safe, that then you don't turn each other on. There's no thrill. Let's just be real clear. The research is real clear about this. People who feel emotionally safe and can have these kinds of bonding conversations, the research says they have sex more often, they enjoy sex more, and they find it more thrilling. Of course they do, because they can play. And if you can play, you can make love on Wednesday, and it's completely different from the way you make love on Saturday, because you're playing, you're a different person on Saturday, right? So that's the kind of variety that works. But somehow our society said, oh no, if you're familiar with somebody, then they're not thrilling anymore. And so what you've got to do is have 32 positions or 68 sex toys or bring 55 partners into the bedroom. You know, this is a craziness, right? It's the wrong level. It's the wrong channel. It just results in people being detached from each other in sex and having no emotional music, right? It's all the research says, emotional safety helps you dance together. In bed, out of bed, it helps you be real, explore, open, right? It's a respond to each other in synchrony, That's what good sex is. That's what a good relationship is.
So in other words, it's not just, this is Dr. Sue Johnson, author of Hold Me Tight. You should try this stuff. It really works. What I hear you saying is it works and the science backs it up.
That's right. And a lot of the stuff, there's a huge amount of misinformation out there about love, about relationships, and about sex. Huge. We've basically, there's so much false news out there about those topics. And it's a big thing because it really impacts people's lives. It impacts their most important relationships. So we have to get the science out there. We have to say to people, listen, there's a map. And, you know, and you don't have to just go out and make relationships just with no map and no help. And, you know, and you can understand your sexuality better and you can, you know, join with a partner in new ways that are much more satisfying.
Okay. Well, we got to go now. Bye.
That wasn't so bad, was it?
No, not at all. Yeah, I was a little worried about it beforehand, but as we're talking, Sue, I keep thinking, oh my goodness, I wish I'd heard this long time ago. Why didn't I hear this a long time ago? And so this is why we're doing these videos, is so that other people can hear it and learn from our journey. So thank you again, Dr. Sue Johnson. Appreciate it very, very much. Our final conversation. Ooh, I'm feeling separation anxiety about this. Our final conversation will be next week. So we'll pick it up here at Higher Ground Cafe in beautiful downtown Bellefontaine, which is where my wife owns the cafe. So come visit us. And if you want to do the same course that Bev and I are doing here with Sue, the same program, 7 Conversations for a Lifetime of Love, the Hold Me Tight online program is available. Go to drewmarshall.ca, click on Hold Me Tight. It'll take you right to where you need to go. Sue, thank you for everything. Thank you.
Thanks.
You're most welcome.